Hello, Houston. My name is Dr. Mark Vorderbruggen, and I'm a forager. What this means is where everyone else looks out and sees a sea of green, of scary and potentially toxic plants, I actually look out and see plants I can eat, plants that are filled with vitamins and minerals, antioxidants, lycopenes, and all that good stuff people spend good money for in stores. For me, just walking down the sidewalk, I can pick a feast. Today, it's July 14th, 2012. I'm standing at the intersection of Woodway Drive and and 610, 610 Loop. Here's some traffic noise for you. It's a busy street on this Saturday afternoon. It's not as crowded as I normally would expect. I guess that has to do with all the rain we've been having. And due to all the rain we've been having, there's an awful lot of mushrooms around here. But mushrooms are a dangerous and difficult breed to identify, so I don't include them in any of my foraging classes. Even mushroom experts on occasion have been known to make mistakes. That's not something I want to do. Most mushrooms will actually destroy your liver, and usually before you even realize it. So that's a bad thing. And I'll be walking up Woodway Drives and just talking about some of the plants I find. Right here at the corner, actually, the ground is covered with Mustang grapes. There's thousands of them on the ground here. The vines above and the trees and the woods here are covered with the Mustang grapes. They are not good to eat raw. They are very acidic. And so they're actually best cooked down into jam or jelly, wine, things like that. Looking amongst the grapes, I also see some greenbrier vines. Greenbriers are very tasty. They taste somewhat like asparagus. Any of the tender parts of the greenbrier are edible. What you want to find is a plant that has both tendrils and thorns, and that is a greenbrier. Once you find that, you just pick off anything that's tender, and it's all edible. Moving down the sidewalk a bit, I find some more of the Mustang grapevines. However, they're loaded also with poison ivy vines interspersed among them. Poison ivy is pretty much the bane of foragers. The leaves of three, let it be, is a good indication. It'll have one central leaf that's symmetrical, and directly behind it will be two leaves that look like mittens, so symmetrical on one side and a thumb-like bump on the other. Walking up a bit farther, we find the American beautyberry bush. Its bright magenta berries grow in clusters along its stem. They're not quite ripe yet, but soon they will be. Look for the waist-high plant with clusters of bright magenta berries on it. Raw, the berries are kind of bland, but again, they cook down into an excellent jam or jelly. All along the trail, or along the sidewalk, there's lots of yaupon holly shrubs. These riotous, chaotic plants are the only naturally occurring source of caffeine that grows here in Texas. Luckily, there's plenty of them. The leaves are point in every direction in just a chaotic jumble, kind of thinking how they're caffeinated and just going crazy in a way. But you have to watch out. There's a toxic mimic called Chinese privet that looks very similar, but instead of the riotous, chaotic organization of leaves, its leaves are all lined up in a very organized manner. Next, I see some pine trees. The needles of the pine trees are loaded with vitamin C, more vitamin C per pound than even oranges or lemons. To get this vitamin C, simply take the needles and chop them up finely, and then simmer them in hot water for 5 to 10 minutes. Don't boil the water. If you boil the water, you'll release turpentine, which will really affect the taste of the tea. Growing along the ground, there's plenty of dewberry brambles. These thorny, spiky vines in the spring produce wonderful dewberries, similar to blackberries. But all year round, the leaves can be used to make a tea that tastes, well, like blackberry tea. Simply harvest the youngest leaves at the very tips of the brambles, at the very tips of the vine, and soak them in hot water. You're good to go. Now I'm standing in front of a pepper vine. The clusters of dark black berries taste somewhat like grape, but they have the weird effect on most people that eat them that after just a few, the back of their throat picks up a kind of a fuzzy, scratchy feel, so most people don't like them. Ah, some goldenrod, a plant most people mistakenly hate. The bright golden flowers show up at the same time as the ragweed flowers do, and so most people blame the goldenrod for their allergies, but in reality, that's not the case. The goldenrod pollen is transported by bees and does not get released into the air. The young tips of the goldenrod plant can be used to just collected and dried, and then when seeped in hot water, give a black licorice sort of flavor tea. There are many branches down in the ground as a result of last year's drought and then this last week's storms. On these branches are thick coatings of lichen, which is basically inland seaweed. Lichen is a mixture of bacteria and fungus, and of the 32,000 different types of lichen, there are only two that are toxic. One is in Siberia, called wolf's poison, and is not found here in the United States. The other is found in the western coast from Alaska down through California and into the Baja Peninsula. It does not make it over the mountains in California, and it's not here. So basically, any lichen you find in Texas is edible. Though to eat it, you have to boil it down, usually with a little bit of sodium bicarbonate added to it to neutralize some of the acid. But once boiled down, it forms a thick, viscous jello type material that then you can sweeten. It's very popular sweetened with maple syrup or other things like that. The ground is covered with pony's foot. This unassuming little weed is pretty much overlooked by everyone, but it is a very good staple for foraging. Its bland, almost tasteless taste is good for cutting the more bitter tastes of things like dandelion or Japanese hawkweed, sow thistle, and other bitter greens. Strands of Spanish moss drape from the trees down the sidewalk. As an edible, it's only so-so. The only last inch or so of the tips of the Spanish moss are worth eating. The better use for it is as an antiseptic bandage in case you're cut out in the woods and have no other first aid kit with you. Simply mash up the plant some to release some of the juices, then pack it in the wound, then wrap it with a bandage or a towel or something. It's recommended you get to help as soon as possible after doing this, but to be perfectly honest, the hunting buddy and I, he took his leg open with an axe once. We packed it up with that and had no problems later on. His wife was mad, but the doctor said there were no issues with what we did. Cool. I found a slippery elm. Of the four different types of elm that are available in Texas, the slippery elm is perhaps the best of all. The inner bark is still used today inside cough drops and so forth. To get to it, you have to peel away the outer bark until you get to the inner bark that kind of looks like basically a white thin layer of wood, maybe 1/8 of an inch thick. Chop this up. You can just chew it raw or you can boil it. Either way, you end up with a nice soothing drink. To identify it, you look at the leaves and they're asymmetrical. One side starts higher up the stem than the other did. Lone dwarf palmetto sits in a wet spot beside the sidewalk. The dwarf palmetto is an excellent source of calories, but it does take some work to get to it because the calories are all located in its heart, which is buried deep underground. To get to it, the easiest way is to chop away all the above ground growth and then with a shovel start digging a hole next to the dwarf palmetto. Go down at least 2 feet and then start heading towards the dwarf palmetto, cutting away any roots that you find until you expose what looks like the center of the heart of celery. Cut that out. Depending on the size of the dwarf palmetto, it could be up to 1.5 feet long and loaded with nice rich starch. To me, it tastes very similar to a potato, but others find it a bit bitter for their tastes. Soaking it overnight in salt water does help before cooking. Small stands of common ragweed are everywhere. Now, this is a plant that causes a lot of people misery, but 15,000 years ago, it was still cultivated by the Native Americans. The seeds are a rich source of calories in the oil in the seeds, and you can still collect the seeds and press the oil out. But if you're allergic to ragweed, it will have the same effect on you. Like I said, this was cultivated up until about 15,000 years ago. At that point, all cultivation of it by the Native Americans stopped. The working theory is at that point, they all actually became allergic to it. As I mentioned earlier, the pollen from this plant is spread through the wind, so it releases huge gobs of it. In some of the shadier areas, I'm seeing lots of nutsedge, this tall, weedy plant with a triangular stem and a cluster of spiky leaves at the top, along with seed heads, was actually cultivated by the ancient Egyptians.
The cluster of seeds at the top is released just by shaking it when the seed heads turn brown, and you'll end up with a handful of small, nutritious seeds. If you dig up the plant, you'll find little spicy peanut-like things growing along the roots of the plant, which are also quite good. But I find getting the seeds from the top much easier. There are pockets of wood sorrel everywhere. This is a tasty little herb. Its leaves are filled with calcium oxalate, which give it a tangy lemon sort of flavor. Most people mistake it for a clover, but the clover's leaves are round, where the wood sorrel's, each of the leaves is heart-shaped. Just pick it and eat it. You can eat it raw, add it to salads, or you can mix it with fish or chicken, wherever you would use a dash of lemon to increase the flavor. Along a fence grows some Japanese honeysuckle. This invasive species was originally brought in to decorate people's yards, but now it covers all sorts of Texas land, and it's really tried to get rid of it. But one of the best ways of getting rid of it is simply eating it. The young, tender tips of the vines can be cooked up like you would spinach or other plants. But make sure you have the Japanese honeysuckle with the white and the yellow flowers. Some of the other honeysuckles can actually be toxic. A passion vine runs along the grass here. The leaves and stem can be used to make a nice sedative tea, and the fruit, though somewhat gelatinous, once peeled, tastes quite good. A row of Turk's cap shrubs grows under a bridge. The bright red flowers are quite tasty, eaten raw. Later on, it produces a small fruit that tastes like apple. This native Texas plant is actually related to okra. A wild lettuce is fighting to grow through the mulch. This tasty plant is somewhat like arugula in that it's very spicy and potent, much more powerful than your normal iceberg lettuce. It's best if drizzled with some hot bacon grease to wilt it, or with a nice wine vinaigrette to kind of balance out the bitterness with some sour. Farther down, there's some sow thistle that's similar to it in that it can be treated the same way. Another salad green. Over in Europe, this was actually raised in gardens as a common vegetable. And we've walked from 610 to the Edge Memorial Park on the sidewalk along Woodway Drive. In that area, we found dozens of wild edible plants that would be capable of being eaten, except for two things. One, being along a roadside like this, they're probably all coated with tire dust that's loaded with heavy metals, and therefore the plants have actually been rendered toxic. Two, Texas state law actually prevents or disallows the removal of any plant material from land you do not own or do not have the written permission of by the landowner. This goes way back to the sheep and cattle wars, where all the land and the plants on them were divided up and claimed. There's no such thing as foraging on public lands in Texas, so even though it's just sitting there along the sidewalks, it's illegal to harvest it. Fines can run from $250 up to $1,500, depending on what they decide to charge you with. Anything from theft up to vandalism. And it's unfortunate, that's the way it is. So, if you do have your own land, even a small suburban backyard, it's quite easy to get these plants to show up, so you can harvest them from there. My easiest technique is just to churn up some earth and put a branch for birds to perch on. The birds will perch on the branch, and as birds have to do, they will poop in the soil. In their poop will be lots of seeds of all sorts of different wild edible plants. As they grow, it's a simple matter of identifying what plants they've delivered to you and pulling out the ones that you can't eat and kind of nurturing the ones that you can.